Good morning and welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. It's a brisk and bright Tuesday morning. It's great to be here. We have an information-packed show for you today. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of stone materials. And the reason they don't is because the way they see it, if they didn't carve it out of the mountain, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. So it's great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. And we appreciate their sponsorship Above the Fold. And as I said, we got an information-packed show for you. And this is going to be a great week. Thursday, we will have Mayor John Daly on. Probably for the full hour. So be sure and tune in for that. We will have we don't pull any punches. We'll give him an opportunity to hit some softballs out of the park, but we'll also ask him some tough questions. So please tune in for that. But today, want to touch on a number of things. We're going to talk about the City Walk decision yesterday by the Development Review Commission. They denied the permit for them to be able to be an overnight shelter. So we'll talk about the process there. In the next segment and what it means moving forward. Just because a government makes decisions doesn't mean people follow them. So we're going to talk about the possible consequences of that decision from a couple different angles. And obviously this will be an issue ripe for the mayor when we talk to him on Thursday. So big issue here in town. In the bottom of the hour, we're going to go over a couple issues with the county commission meeting, which will take place at 3:00 today. We'll go through the discretionary spending, specifics of that. There's a little over $1.5 million that Leon County Commission takes and doles out to different programs. As has been said before, I've said it before, priorities, are one of the biggest things in local government. And so this, obviously, looking at where they spend this money, I give you a sense of the priorities. And again, it's your money that's being spent, so I think it's important for you to know. Again, a little bit in the weeds, but still, $1.5 million funding many different things. And we'll get into the details and also give you a couple just maybe higher looks at a couple of issues that they're going to be voting on. I know they're voting on the Marpan recycling issue. There's a pretrial report. We talked a little bit on Thursday, pretrial release report that we talked a little bit on Thursday about. Touch on that again. We got a story up on Taos Reports about that. And so this is... they have these meetings once every 3 to 4 weeks, take care of the people's business, and we try to pick the 4 or 5 issues that impact the most people and the most impact on the community to talk about. So we'll discuss that. Our last segment, as we've been doing routinely, we'll give you the weekly Leon County COVID number update. Look, it's following the state numbers. Everything is falling quickly. And so we'll go over those numbers again. And, we talked about previously about policy catching up with the COVID numbers. And we've seen some announcements with, in-person graduations, in-person classes starting at FSU over the summer. And then you've got LCS, Leon County Schools, talking about doing away with Digital Academy next fall. So those are decisions that are the direct result of the numbers coming down and obviously the impact of the vaccine, which is moving forward. We'll also we'll update you on the vaccine report in terms of who's being vaccinated. Obviously now there's a big brouhaha with, getting the vaccinations out to people, and the media has focused more on who's getting the vaccines and some hiccups in the process because of Governor DeSantis being a Republican than they have on how good Florida's been doing with getting the vaccination out. And his over 65 focus, I think, has really led to these numbers coming down because those are the most vulnerable. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I mean, Nikki Fried is in front of a camera every time she can get a chance to trash DeSantis on any issue, but now it's the vaccines. It was about, the testing and the deaths, but now the hospitalizations, but now that that's all coming down, she's moved to another issue. So we'll talk about that in the last segment. But, there is one thing, this is why you got to be careful with what the I call it the legacy media's reporting. You remember Rebecca Jones was sort of the star for a while, and one of her big deals was, you know, they're underreporting deaths. They're not reporting deaths correctly. And even some people who are considering running for governor criticized DeSantis as they're hiding numbers. Yeah, those are very the big critiques and allegations. But we've got, Tosh Reports has up a story from a professor at USF who a lot of people follow because of his he's not getting paid to do this. He's created a COVID dashboard, and he's got some different perspectives on this. And he actually addressed the question, is Florida underreporting deaths? So we'll talk about that in the last segment. But, you know, it's, again, we've talked about how emotional the media can get in terms of putting stories out there to get you to click on it. And you've really got to be careful when you look at a story and you look at, you know, the allegations, you got to go back and look at the facts. I mean, we posted a story last week about Commissioner Nikki Fried's connections with the cannabis company that her fiance has started. And we attached documents after documents showing the actual connections between a person that she appointed to a board. Her father is the founder of a company with her fiance. And, you know, the statewide media did not find anything in that report with all those documents that was worthy of reporting. Now, I will tell you this. They reported that Bergman, her fiance, had a cannabis-related business, but they did not go to the extra step and say who the founders were and how they related to Nikki Fried. So now this becomes a question that you got to ask yourself. You know, when you read these Nikki Fried stories about her going after the governor, is this a protection scheme by the statewide media to protect Nikki Fried so that they have this, you know, they have this election for governor in 2022? Is it that the reporters are just incompetent and they can't actually go to sunbiz.org and click on some business filings to see who's connected to these? Or is it they are just really beholden to a perspective, obviously liberal or Democrat, and they don't want to cover it. We're going to, you know, sometimes a story results in another story. We're going to continue to follow the Nikki Fried connections with these cannabis companies that her fiance has started, because I think it's relevant. Because just imagine if Casey DeSantis, the governor's wife, starts a company with the governor's father, and then somebody from FPNL or an electric utility is on the board or is helps find create the company. That wouldn't fly, and now it's flying under the radar at this point with the Commissioner Nikki Fried. So all I know is to continue to talk about it and maybe even ask some reporters why they're not covering it. I mean, if you look at here in the local newspaper, they are publishing Fried stories every other day. Now, I don't know if it has to do with advertising money or they're just their inability to cover fairly, but we're going to get to the bottom of that we'll keep talking about it, because this story on Fried is backed up by documents and there needs to be a couple of questions asked about that. But anyway, a little bit of a rant there, but a little bit concerned that we're not seeing some coverage of these potential conflicts of interest. And, you know, it's something that we're good at uncovering and providing the documents. And I think, you know, the way journalism used to work is people used to pick up this and advance the story by asking questions of those involved. That's not happening. We need to determine why and then move on from there. All right, when we get back, we'll pivot back here locally. We'll talk about the DRC decision on City Walk. We'll detail that and then look at what are the consequences of that decision moving forward. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. It's Tuesday. You're listening to Above the Fold. Welcome back to Above the Fold on Real Talk 93.3. I'm Steve Stewart, your host. You know, the more I read, look, Governor DeSantis is a Republican. The Republicans are in charge of the state. No doubt that they need to be held in check and the media's got to ask questions. But, you know, what we're seeing now is that they're criticizing DeSantis for, you know, having these press conferences and making political hay out of distributing vaccines. And this is something that happens in every emergency. And if you remember hurricanes, actually, sometimes that's how governors get elected, is their responsiveness in times of crisis. And here is Governor DeSantis trying to do that with the vaccines. And obviously, with an eye to an election, you want to get out and do as many of these as you can, because first of all, it's good to get the vaccines out. And also, you are a politician. Same thing happens during hurricanes when, you know, you used to have Charlie Crist and Jeb Bush and Rick Scott would show up with his Army hat or his Navy hat on. And that's the power of an incumbency. But to argue that this is unethical or that there's some kind of conflict, you know, without any, you know, any documents or any, you know, quid pro quo evidence, I mean, it's just really taking this to a level of they're just wanting to go after a governor. And so, again, I understand the definitely want to look into it, but when you start criticizing them for going to press conferences to announce vaccines are being distributed in the area, I don't know where you go from there. All right, back to Tallahassee City Walk. We've talked a lot about this. And the first part of this segment specifically on the decision by the Development Review Committee, which was taking under advisement a request by the City Walk to officially become a homeless shelter. So they had to get a different kind of permit or zoning decision. And this is the committee that decides these things. Now, I think it can get appealed or move up to the city commission, but there's a board of about five people that makes the decision. And they hear testimony from people who have an interest in the issue. And this went on, you know, usually if it's a real, you know, controversial issue, you can get hours of testimony, which happened here. And, you know, if you remember the issues, City Walk started putting opened as a cold weather shelter with the blessing of you know, local government to a degree. That slowly went away when neighborhoods started complaining about some of the consequences of having a shelter there in that area. But they started as a cold weather shelter, and then it moved on into just sheltering homeless people because of the demand. And so what has happened is, you know, you had panhandlers, you had people who were accosted on the sidewalk, you had, you know, you had sexual predators who were registering at the site. That was all last year. You had increased calls from, you know, for police to come and deal with issues. You got business owners in the area who were, their businesses are being hurt because of the presence of the homeless people around the shelter. And so this has become a major issue. And, you know, you would say, well, this is just an issue that's going to be through the pandemic. But now the group here that runs this have a 10-year lease on this building, which was an office building. And now they want to run their mission there. And it is a religious mission. And part of that is they wanted to be a homeless shelter. Well, the DRC, after hearing all the testimony, went ahead and voted unanimously to vote against permitting the application seeking a permit to turn it into a homeless shelter. So now where do you go from here? You know, I don't think it's a shock that it's been denied. The people that run the site, Renee Miller and her husband Tony Miller, have said they intend to continue offering services just without the overnight aspect of a homeless shelter. And the point there being, and this is what we wanted to talk about, in terms of the unintended consequences. So you've got a shelter there that now the cold weather issue has let homeless people know where it is. So, you know, it sort of helped with the marketing as local officials and nonprofits used it as a cold weather shelter. So now you've established a constituency for that shelter. And now you're saying you can't any longer be a homeless shelter. So now, if you're going to offer services to the homeless during the day, but you're not going to offer overnight stays, and you have a constituency already there, what is going to be the result? I think that, you know, are the homeless going to just pick up and leave and go find somewhere else to get services? Is local government going to help with that? Because if not, I think the issue is going to be this, is that they're going to be there all day for the services that are being offered, and at night they're going to have to stay near that shelter so they can continue to get the services. So, again, just because they are saying that they're not going to give them this permit, I don't know, you know, that's sort of that's a win on paper for the neighborhood and the businesses. But now the next step is, how do you enforce that? And this is where it can get a little bit dicey, because I think, and this is what I'll talk to the mayor about next Thursday, is when are we going to start enforcing the laws with regards to some of these issues? You know, and I don't, you know, when are homeless people going to be not allowed to form encampments on private property or government property? When are the laws going to be enforced? Now, until this point, you know, the COVID pandemic has been the issue, because you weren't going to enforce the laws because we were in emergency situations and people were just trying to survive. And so, but we're coming to the end of that. We're starting to see decisions that are saying, look, this pandemic is nearing a point to where it can't affect what we're doing from a policy situation. So now what's going to happen here? So I, you know, this, just because you, if you pass this, you know, this vote is, again, a win on paper, but it doesn't mean this is going to be a sudden change overnight. So we're going to have to keep an eye on this. And I think it's going to come back to the issue that we've been talking about, is that there's not an infrastructure in Leon County or Tallahassee that has been designed by local government, local authorities, that are addressing the homeless issue that we have. And if they think that just because the pandemic is starting to go away, that all of a sudden these homeless people are going to disappear, that's not going to happen. You've got to ask yourself, why are they here to begin with? You know, we've been told by a number of sources that, you know, 70% are not from Leon County. So did they come here? And now to think that they're just going to leave, I think it's going to take a concerted effort from local government, not just nonprofits, because the nonprofits have been handling this. And I think what you see when you're under, you know, when there's a challenge, when there's becomes obstacles, when there becomes the COVID emergency, you see what the process is in place, and you can see the weaknesses. And I think this has revealed the weaknesses we have in the structure to deal with the homeless problem. And now, if people think that it's going to be back to the way it was before the pandemic, and they'll be out of sight, out of mind, they'll be over at the Kearney Center and in that part of town, I don't think that happens without concerted effort. And again, we'll ask the mayor about this when he's on Thursday. But I think we're going to have to look at the whole structure of what we're doing, what services, you know, what's the speech to someone that you go tell they can't be putting up a camp, you know, next to a retention pond in the woods in a neighborhood. You know, look, these are your options. You've got to have options. You got to say, look, we've got a food bank. We've got, you know, mental health resources. We've got job placement services. But to get these, you've got to come with us. You cannot continue to violate the law. I don't think we're not doing that now, because I don't know if we have the menu of services that are needed by these people. And that's going to be something that over the next 3 or 4 months, I think we're going to be challenged by that in this community. All right. Enough on the that issue. We're going to pivot now to the county commission meeting that will be, take place today at 3 o'clock. And what I'm going to tell you in the next segment is there's about $1.5 million of your dollars that go to what they call discretionary spending. And we're going to run through the line items of where that money goes, just to let you know, hey, this is where your tax dollars are being spent. So, and we'll cover some broader some issues from a broader perspective also at the county commission meeting. So stay tuned. I'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk and 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Stop by today and get a free paint sample. To start your new project, give them a call at 385-6649, 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship. Okay, pivoting to the Leon County Commission meeting, which is going to begin in just a few hours from now. Wanted to touch on just a couple of the issues, but start with some specifics on the discretionary spending item that they'll be taking up. So discretionary spending means, you know, this is stuff that's not, doesn't have like, you don't have constraints to where it must be spent, like a fire service fee or law enforcement, a gas tax, things like that. So there's about a million seven now is the fiscal year 21 discretionary spending bucket. And wanted to go through the specifics and give you an idea of where your money's being spent. Now, the Community Human Service Partnership gets the lion's share of this money. $1.445 million goes to the Community Human Service Partnership. And we'll talk about where some of those, what some of those programs are in a minute. Also in this discretionary money is commission office budgets. So each commissioner gets about $12,000 and I guess that's their discretionary spending. So that's a total of about $87,000. That's the same as last year. And I should go back to the CHSP, the Community Human Service Partnership. The $1.4 million is a $145,000 increase from fiscal year 2020. Then there are special event sponsorships. Last year, that was $27,000. That's up to $37,000. We'll run through some of the special events that are getting some of your tax dollars. And then there's a specific line item for the Kearney Homeless Shelter. And this is actually for capital improvements, and this is $100,000. So when you add all that up, you come up to about $1.67 million in discretionary spending. Now, if you look at the CHSP part of this, I wanted to go through some of the programs that are getting money out of that $1.4 million. And some of these will be, you'll have heard of these, some of the you won't, but I'll run through them. The Appalachian Regional Planning Council is going to get $8,800 if this is adopted. This is the recommendations. Disc Village, $222,000. Domestic Violence Coordinating Council, $25,000. Legal Services of North Florida, $125,000. The Oasis Center, $20,000. St. Francis Wildlife Association, $71,250. The Senior Citizens Foundation, $179,000 going to the Tallahassee Senior Citizen Foundation. Trust for Historic Preservation, $63,000. United Partners for Human Services, $23,000. And Hold Child Leon, $38,000. So that, you know, if you look at this, the distribution of this money, obviously the, you know, the big ticket items are the Disc Village, the Legal Services of North Florida, and the Tallahassee Senior Citizens Foundation. We'll have to dig a little bit more into maybe what those groups are spending their money on. Actually, we're going to do that. We'll do a report on that. I'm just thinking about that. That'd be great. But those were, that's some of the major, I guess, benefactors from your tax dollars there. Now, if we go back and look at the special events, there's $37,000 on this. Again, just wanted to let you know the priority is not a lot of money, but it does tell you what they're sponsoring. All right, Celebrate America 4th of July celebration. Last year got $2,500. This year we'll get $2,500. Dr. Martin Luther King celebration. Last year got $4,500. This year we'll get $4,500. NAACP Freedom Fund Award is getting $1,000. Last year we'll get $1,000. This year Soul Santa is going to get $4,000. Last year it got, this year we'll get $4,000. Now that is basically, that is money that is going to two community senators. centers to sponsor Soul Santa related events. Frenchtown's getting $2,500, and that's near FSU, north of FSU, and then the Walker Ford, which is Southside, is getting $1,500. And then county-sponsored tables slash community events is $25,000. That's the same as last year. And so those are the special event funding that is listed in this this agenda item. So, again, I think it's important to know where your tax dollars are going, and we'll get a report on some of those bigger items and see exactly what the money is being being spent on. And obviously you see some money in here going to the Kearney Homeless Shelter, which will be, again, a topic. We want to promote this with our discussion with Mayor John Daly on Thursday. So don't forget that and tune in on Thursday. Now, other issues that at the Leon County Commission meeting that we've maybe touched on, one that I think is very interesting is this, and we've done a story on this at Talos Reports, is the Leon County Sheriff's Office Real-Time Crime Center project. They're trying to beef up their crime solving apparatus, and this is a looks like a collaborating effort between FSU and the city of Tallahassee and the Leon County Sheriff's Office to get some the crime solvers all in one building. FSU I think is donating a building. There's a it's going to cost some money to get started, but this you know, this is where they process information and work collaboratively with each other to solve crimes. And let me tell you, this is something that we've talked about and has been an issue across the country because of the COVID pandemic, is when you start telling investigators, and I'm not saying that that's happening here in Leon County, although we've had reports that it is, it's happening around the country, is because of the pandemic, as you were working from home, the collaboration efforts, you know, weren't there. So crimes weren't being solved from that perspective. And so I think this is the timing on this is going to be pretty good, especially at the end of the pandemic. It's important to ramp up, you know, crime solving, because as we've reported, you know, arrests are down, and this is because of the pandemic, because we're not engaging with law enforcement is not engaging with people as frequently as they had previously. And so it's going to be important to get this going and get started on the right foot. When the policy catches up to the numbers, the decreasing numbers of the pandemic. So I'm going to be interested to hear the discussion about this issue before the Leon County Commission. We've talked about this before with the problem in recycling services. Previously, 10 years ago, we were being able to recycle, and actually, you know, the city and the county were receiving money from the company here recycling because we gave them the right to collect the recycling from homes. But now that's changed because of market forces, and we're having to pay now to have recycling. And I think the agreement now is to keep Marpan doing this for about $80,000 a year until they can figure out which direction to head, because this could get more and more expensive to actually recycle. I mean, this may be a community mission that we want, and that's not going to be an issue. We're just going to add it into our utility bills, and this is the cost of recycling. So we'll have to see where that goes. But that is that's an issue that's going to be addressed. And another article that we did on the supervised pretrial release program report, and you can go and read the numbers on that. But basically, what this is. This is trying to cut costs in the sense that you, instead of keeping people in jail, you give them a pre-trial release program. You try to minimize the risk to the community in the sense you evaluate who you're letting out. I think we've had out of the percentage of failures in the sense that they violated their pre-trial release parameters was about 35%, which was consistent with what happened last year. So that report, you can, again, read about that on Talos Reports. We issue the specific numbers. But that's an issue that they're also going to take up at the City Commission meeting. Another one that I think is, you know, sort of interesting now is the report on broadband access in rural communities. You know, this has been an issue. I know that the city, Commissioner Jerry Matlow has brought this up, wanting to get more broadband access, and he was wanting more government not interference, government contribution or government role in getting affordable broadband access and access to people that can't get it. You know, the response by people who are against that was that, you know, you have Metro, you're going to have competition here in Leon County with MetroNet coming in. So it'd be interesting to hear this report and see if that comes up at all, that, look, we've got a new private sector competitor here, and, you know, this is going to offer new services to rural communities. You know, is that going to be enough, or is it something that local government's going to need to get involved with? So anyway, we'll have an update on what the Leon County Commission decided on some of these issues, you know, in another edition Above the Fold. But these are some of the major ones that they're dealing with, and we'll move on from there. So in our final segment today, we'll give you the weekly COVID update for Leon County. We'll talk about a vaccine report and some other issues. So stay tuned. It's a beautiful Tuesday out there, and you're listening to Above the Fold. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. You know, one thing I wanted to mention real quick before we get into the weekly COVID numbers for Leon County, we do have a story up. We've started trying to publish some national stories. We do summaries of articles and provide you with other information. We've got a story up on Mayor Andrew Cuomo. Not mayor, I'm sorry, Governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo. You know, this is an issue that covers so many different things, and we felt like it was something that we wanted to give our readers access to. And if you look at the story, we've got a number of links where you can go to other reports and get more information if this is something that interests you. But to me, this brings together the COVID issue. It brings together this the sexual harassment crisis or issue that we've had over the last couple of years. I guess it's been called the Me Too movement. It looks at how Democrats and Republicans get handled differently in the media. But now, you know, but at the same point, now this is, you've got Democrats really calling out Cuomo. So this, I think, is a really rich story in how things get covered and where there are limits and what it really takes for the media to cover sort of their something they normally wouldn't cover. So now, you know, and it gives you sort of that roadmap. And what we've tried to do is, again, it's a summary of reporting with a number of links, and you can click on that and dig into it as much as you want to, or you can just move on to some other of the great content on that website, TajReports.com. But anyway, all right, weekly COVID numbers in Leon County. You know, starting to sound a little bit like a broken record, but, you know, we're continue to talk about it, and this is something we'll talk to the mayor about on Thursday. If you go to our website, what we've done is, you know, we don't publish stories every day of the week on the numbers in Leon County. I am a big trend person. I think it's much better to look at trends absent some major development. And we've got three charts. We look at positivity rates, hospitalizations, and cases. And, you know, let me just give you a summary of the week, of the seven-day average. We compare the week to the previous week. On the number of cases, they're down 23.5% from an average of 68 cases a week ago to 52 cases. Hospitalizations are down. They fell tremendously, and they have sort of flattened out at like about 44. The hospitalizations were at 44 last week. They're at 43. This is a seven-day average, again, down just a couple of percent. But that is, you know, way below the 150 average that they had, or the 125 average they had in January. The positivity rates for this week is down from 3.8%, which is already low, to 3.0%, which is a 20% decrease. But the positivity rate has fell from 10% on January the 3rd to 2.9% on March the 7th. So that has been a trend downward. And so, look, these are following the state numbers, although I would argue Leon County's rate of decline is probably higher than even the state numbers. So this is good news. and is one of the reasons why we're starting to see policies change. Now, on the vaccine report, wanted to just give you again some round numbers here. This is the big news now because of we're trying to get vaccinations out, and Governor DeSantis has been calling for the over 65 to be vaccinated first, and so that is the approach that he's taken. So in Leon County, we're looking at the vaccinations. Let's see if we look at the total people vaccinated in Leon County on 3/6 was 1,600 people. We averaged over the last 5 days probably close to 1,200 people vaccinated. And as I reported previously, we've got a high percentage of our over 65 population that is vaccinated, which I think is obviously impacting the number of hospitalizations and also the number of cases, which is all really good news. Now, you know, we've had an issue here that's been publicized the gap between the number of white people that have been vaccinated and the African Americans. FAMU has set up a vaccination site, or we've set up a vaccinating site at FAMU. Very low demand, and so I don't think it's about access. I think there are other issues at play that we don't have really time to get into, but that has been an issue, and I think that it's fair to say it's been recognized, and I think it's also fair to say that in a lot of communities here in Leon County that it's trying to be addressed. I don't think it's access, but we'll keep an eye on that. Another story that we wanted to talk about was, and there's been a lot of over the issue with the pandemic, a lot of complaints or questions about data, and obviously, you know, that becomes, when you start reporting on data, it's only as accurate as the people that you trust that are reporting it, and this is all coming from, you know, obviously the Department of Health, which is the Florida state government, and that goes back to ultimately Governor Ron DeSantis. A lot of people have been very critical. You saw the Rebecca Jones brouhaha, which came out for a while, and now I would argue that she's been discredited on what she's been saying. Media sort of dropped her. But, you know, people that are looking to angle politically here, like Nikki Fried and maybe even Gwen Graham, have argued that, you know, the state of Florida is underreporting deaths. And, you know, that is that's a very strong allegation. And so, you know, one of the things we wanted to try to provide out there, you know, if you believe that is happening from a political standpoint, you know, I would think you'd want to look at more than just one source and try to figure this out. We put a story up following the Twitter account of a USF epidemiologist. Seems not to have a political axe to grind. He started following, he's a University of South Florida professor. He put together his own COVID tracking dashboard. Been followed by a number of reporters. And, you know, he basically put a thread up addressing this idea that Florida is underreporting deaths. And his conclusion is, you know, that he doesn't think Florida is intentionally underreporting or misrepresenting COVID deaths. He added that COVID death reporting is not perfect, but he believes that it is not worse in Florida than other places. Now, you know, if you go to our website, you can get a links to the Twitter feed. And, you know, look, he admits that there are some issues here. For example, Florida not reporting the deaths of people who weren't residents here, but he doesn't think that was, intentional. He thinks that, you know, that's how DOH has to pick these issues of how they report data. And that's how traditionally it was reported. You had to be a resident here to really qualify it for it to be reported. Now that has been changed. Now they're reporting, deaths of people who do not reside in Florida, but are here in Florida when they die from COVID. So I think his point is, you know, data reporting is not perfect, but you've really got, I think when you start saying, leveling these allegations and start really putting people's reputation on the lines, you got to have some pretty hard data. And I think if you look at this, would provide a pretty balanced approach to some of the stuff you're getting, that you're getting from people who have a political axe to grind. Now, that would be the same thing to say, you know, as Governor DeSantis is just saying that everything's going great. Obviously, you know, that's what he politically wants. You know, he's promoting that spin. And you, and yes, things can be good, but maybe not as good as Governor DeSantis thinks so. This is the same thing with the other side of this. And I urge you to go and get as many reports on different things that you can. And you can get to the truth if you want it. We're trying to help that here and at Talos Reports. All right. With that said, we've got to wind up this show. And so I hope you enjoy the weather out today. And don't forget to join us Tuesday. We'll have Tallahassee's Mayor John Daly with us. So have a great afternoon. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.